From NPR News, this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Joe Palca. Imagine an organism that's so abundant that it's responsible for 50% of the photosynthesis in the ocean. And what if that same organism played a huge role in the ocean ecosystem, affecting everything from food for larger marine life to the workings of climate change? Well, there is such an organism, and it's called Prochlorococcus. And you can practice saying that later because it's hard to say Prochlorococcus. But what's really amazing about this tiny marine bacterium is that 20 years ago, it was completely unknown. Penny Chisholm wasn't looking for Prochlorococcus when she went on a cruise from Cape Cod to Bermuda 2 decades ago, but she and Rob Olson were the first to find this microorganism. Penny Chisholm is the Lee and Geraldine Martin Professor of Environmental Studies in the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering at the Department of Biology at MIT, and she joins me from a studio at the MIT campus. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. And if you want to ask questions about Prochlorococcus, and I hope you do because it's a fascinating little critter, give us a call. The number is 800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. So, Penny Chisholm, what makes Prochlorococcus so special? Why are we excited about this organism?
Well, it's filled with superlatives. It's the smallest and the most abundant photosynthetic cell on the planet. I mean, it's one of thousands of different species of phytoplankton in the oceans. And those are the small microscopic plants that are the base of the food chain in the oceans. But because it's so small and incredibly abundant and seems to be very versatile in the regions it can occupy, and because it's so recently discovered, it's starting to get a fair amount of attention.
And how did you discover it? I mean, it's a fascinating story. It wasn't something that you were saying, oh, let's go out and discover an incredibly unknown organism at this point. What do you want to do today? I don't know. Let's go out and discover something.
No, yeah, indeed, that wasn't how it happened. And in fact, Rob Olson gets the lion's share of credit for this discovery. I always say Rob discovered it, I popularized it.
Got it.
We were working with an instrument that was designed for biomedical research called a flow cytometer, and we were using that to study cell cycle progression in phytoplanktons and phytoplankton cells. And after we worked with that for a while, we realized that it was ideally suited for studying plankton at sea because they have a fluorescence signal that's natural. They auto-fluoresce. So we managed to get one of these instruments, and Rob had the courage to put it on a ship. It's meant to be in a pristine laboratory in a hospital. And we started studying a cousin of Prochlorococcus, which is called Sinicococcus, equally hard to say. And that was pretty clear. It fluoresced red, I mean orange, and was bigger. And so it was when we were studying that these other tiny cells started to become apparent, and Rob noticed them coming out of the noise of the instrument.
I should remind people or tell them that if you go to our website, sciencefriday.com, you can actually see some images of the phytoplankton. And if you're curious, you can see images of Penny Chisholm on our website, although they look a little different. You can tell one from the other.
The plankton are handsomer.
Oh, don't say that. Anyway, we have a bunch of people who have questions, so why don't we go ahead and take a call now from, Eric in Modesto. Eric, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Good.
I just saw a report on TV not too long ago where a gentleman was refining pond scum, believe it or not, into usable fuel. Is this growth that you guys have found possibly able to be used for fuel in the future? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, thanks, Eric. Penny, are we going to see Prochlorococcus power plants? Boy, that would be a hard sentence to say.
Yeah, that would. Probably not directly, but we think that studying Prochlorococcus and how it works could provide an interesting chassis for building synthetic photosynthetic systems because it's the smallest amount of information that can convert solar energy into biomass. It only has 2,000 genes, And with that, it can make living biomass. But it would not be the organism you'd use directly to make fuels. It's finicky in its growth. It grows slowly and would be very difficult to harvest.
You know, that's one. You were mentioning the 2,000 genes, and one of the things that I find so interesting about Prochlorococcus is the research that you've done has shown that of those 2,000, only about 1,200 are shared by every Prochlorococci, and then the rest are sort of different. And it's hard to think of a species that, you know, only has, what is it, 60% of their genes shared, and then everything else is different.
Yeah, that's in fact one of the things we think is the key to how abundant Prochlorococcus is and how widespread it is, because it has this core of shared genes that makes it a Prochlorococcus, but these other genes are what make each different, what we call them ecotypes, and those genes are what make them slightly different, so that there's this great diversity of Prochlorococci out there, and so when the environment changes, one of the ecotypes gains a slight advantage over the others, and then if it changes another way, another one gains an advantage, and that contributes to the overall stability of the group.
But now, maybe is Prochlorococcus a species or a genus, or how should we think about this?
Oh, that question.
Mm-hmm.
In my lab, we've dispensed with the idea of bacterial species, and we think of them as we think of them all as genomic variants. But in the traditionally, yes, Prochlorococcus as a collective would have been considered a single species. And now we know that within that group, whatever you name it, there are significant variants.
Hmm. It's just going to take a different way of thinking about things, I guess. But maybe the microbiologists are ahead of us on this one.
Yes, we are. We are starting to think about it completely differently than the old days.
Cool. Let's take another call and go to Alvin in McLean, Virginia. Alvin, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi. I just had a question about the Prochlorococcus bacteria.
Uh-huh.
Can we somehow utilize it to reduce the greenhouse gas in the air right now?
Reduce greenhouse gas. Interesting question, Alvin. What about that, Penny Chisholm?
Well, it is, as we speak, doing its job out in the oceans, because as it photosynthesizes, it draws CO2 out of the atmosphere and plays a role in what we call the biological pump in the oceans, which is a steady moving of CO2 from the atmosphere through the food web, and then small amounts of that carbon settles to the deep ocean. And that's all part of the global ocean carbon cycle. And just to give you an example of how important this pump is, and all the phytoplankton are involved in that, not just Prochlorococcus, but if the oceans were dead, the carbon dioxide, and there was no photosynthesis, the carbon dioxide from the deep ocean would equilibrate with the atmosphere, and the atmosphere would have maybe double the CO2 it has now. So that food web that Prochlorococcus is an integral part of is playing a really important role maintaining the CO2 concentrations in the atmosphere where they are.
So I just getting to definitions here for a second. We had an earlier call about pond scum, and you've been talking about phytoplankton. Are they the same thing, or are these two different things?
Pond scum is a derogatory term for phytoplankton. It's when...
Oh, sorry. I apologize.
Yes. Please.
We don't mean to cast dispersions here.
The same cells that become pond scum are really vital to the food web of that pond. And it becomes scum when a pond is enriched with nutrients by humans. Most of the time, that's the reason. But yes, what we refer to as pond scum is often relatives of Prochlorococcus.
I got it. All right, let's take another call now and go to Mark in Windsor, California. Mark, welcome to Science Friday.
Oh, hello. Thank you.
You bet.
When you said the organism lit up red, it reminded me of another organism called Serratia marcescens. And at one time, that organism was used to as a marker organism because of its red color, and it turned out to be a pathogen over so many years. Is there any possibility that this organism could be a pathogen in humans?
I think not. I think not. It fluoresces red because it contains chlorophyll, which so it fluoresces red when you shine blue light on it, and that's from the chlorophyll. So we've never even thought about that question, but I would drink Prochlorococcus without worrying about it.
But Mark, okay. Mark, can I ask you, is that other compound you were talking about, is that what sometimes is referred to as red tide, or is that something else?
No, it was an organism. It's a bacterial organism that was used by the Army many years ago as a mark organism. It was also used in dentistry to, because it was red, you could use it in a procedure, and it was thought to be a non-pathogen, so you could put it on a tooth, for example, operate on it, and then later look for the organism and see if that operation caused the organism to invade the tissue. And certainly it did, and after, you know, several years, we found out it was a pathogen. So, you know, I'd be careful if it was an organism that could grow in the bloodstream.
Ah, interesting.
That's all I'm saying.
Oh, well, yeah. Maybe something to pay attention to. Mark, thanks very much for the call. It does make me. I've heard people say that, you know, you could get a mouthful of this. Certainly, people have swum in waters where Prochlorococcus is growing, and you don't hear reports about Prochlorococcus poisoning. That's another sentence I shouldn't be having to say on the radio. So maybe it's not a terrible pathogen, even if it's pathogenic to some people. Let's take another call. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say I'm fairly certain that it's not.
Okay, well, let's take another call now and go to Michael in, is it McCallamy, California?
Yes, McCallamy Hill.
Oh, okay.
I'm just questioning, every organism has to eat something to survive. I know there's photosynthesis involved here. But what does this organism eat, and what eats it, and where does it stand on the food chain?
Good question, Michael. Thanks. What does Prochlorococcus eat?
Excellent question. It is, as far as we know, an obligate phototroph, which means it uses sun's energy and carbon dioxide to photosynthesize and make its own organic carbon. So it doesn't eat any other organisms. But what eats it is a big research challenge for the field. We think microscopic protists. Well, we know microscopic protists, which are just larger single-celled microbes in the oceans, do eat Prochlorococcus, but we don't know particularly what kinds or how complicated that web is. The other thing that's really important in this food web are viruses. We study viruses that infect Prochlorococcus, and that's a source of mortality for them. They're floating around the oceans. But they also carry genes from Prochlorococcus, and they move them around from one cell to another and creating a diversity and we think that's a really important process in maintaining the complexity and stability and diversity of the Prochlorococcus system.
We're talking with Penny Chisholm. She's in the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering and the Department of Biology at MIT, and she's one of the people who has discovered and popularized this tiny organism called Prochlorococcus. I'm Joe Palka, and this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And why don't we take another call now and go to Richard in Springfield, Pennsylvania. Richard, welcome to Science Friday.
Hello. Yes, short question. Is Prochlorococcus...
Very good.
Sensitive to temperature, and does it appear all over the Earth?
Oh, excellent question. The different ecotypes that I've referred to, or you can think of them as different strains, have different temperature optima. And so there are some that are dominant in the warm equatorial waters, and then there are some that take over as you go more poleward. But finally, you reach a point at about 40 degrees latitude, they disappear. So Prochlorococcus does not grow in the polar regions, but their close cousin Sinicococcus does, and that's kind of a puzzle.
Interesting, strange. Well, thanks for that question, Richard. You know, I'm wondering, you said that Prochlorococcus is beginning to get the respect that you think it deserves. Is it really still unknown, or is it now an established part of the ecosystem and people are studying it just like they study anything else, or is it a neglected marine microorganism?
Well, it's not neglected within our community, mm-hmm. but I think all microorganisms are neglected, and in fact we sometimes refer to the phytoplankton in the oceans as the invisible forest because they photosynthesize as much as all of the plants on land, and yet, you know, we look at the ocean and we don't even think about that and how profound that is. So microbes are really ruling this planet, and that's one of the reasons I've become an advocate of Prochlorococcus, because it is something that's easy to advocate because of all of its superlatives and because of its global abundance. But all microbes, whether they're abundant or not, are playing a really important role in regulating our climate and our atmosphere and our soils. And so I think they deserve a lot more attention. And in fact, one of the reasons that we've been able to make the advances we've made in the last 4 or 5 years is because of accelerated funding from the Gordon and Betty Moore Foundation, who decided that microbes were underappreciated and is funding a lot of basic research in marine microbiology.
I got it. So what is next? I mean, we only have a few seconds left, but is there a particular, if you had one question to ask about Prochlorococcus you'd like the answer to, what would you ask?
The frontiers are who's eating you? What role are the viruses actually playing?
Ooh, viruses. Have we talked about those yet?
A little bit.
Okay.
But they're really important.
Okay.
And I think that they're actually, even though they kill Prochlorococcus cells, they're very important in maintaining the diversity of the global population. So those are two big questions. And also how Prochlorococcus interacts with all of the other bacteria out there that are growing on the products of Prochlorococcus's photosynthesis. So that's where their organic carbon comes from,
okay.
And we know that there are probably synergies.
Penny Chisholm, we have to leave it right there. I apologize. Penny Chisholm is in the Department of Biology at MIT, and thanks for talking to me today.
Thank you.
Okay, when we come back, some people can't carry a tune, and why some scientists care about them. Stay with us. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.